right, let's get going. Hello and welcome, everyone. My name is John Marks. I'm the editor of CopsAlive.com, and I thank you very much for listening. Cops Alive was founded to help police officers and other law enforcement professionals plan for happy, healthy, and successful lives both on the job and beyond the job. We do that by assembling as much useful information as we can for you, and we promote that on CopsAlive.com as a website and also through training programs like this teleseminar. Today, our topic is the five critical concepts you must know to start a business with our guest, Lori Taylor. Lori is a business growth specialist and the president of Flashpoint, which provides solutions to help you grow and manage your business. Lori knows the challenges of business owners and has faced them herself as she's learned to manage the pieces and the parts of a day-to-day business operation. She took a marketing communications business from 2 employees to 104 with up to $12 million in sales, and now she helps other entrepreneurs grow and develop their businesses as well. Lori is committed to helping business owners succeed. Lori's real-time experience in starting and growing her business taps into the realities of leadership and management, the two hardest aspects of running any business. I know Lori's online, so thank you, Lori, and welcome.
Well, thanks, John. It's a delight to be here.
Why don't we jump right in? I know you're going to share with us five critical concepts. Would you mind telling us what you're going to recommend to us today?
I'll be happy to. And I wanted to just, for the sake of your listeners, just give you a quick plug, John, because if you don't know John Marks and you haven't engaged with John, I would urge you seriously to go visit his CopsAlive.com website. I think the work John is doing to help police officers get a better handle on their current situation as well as help them plan for different opportunities that they might want to look at as they decide to either stay in the field or leave and start something else on their own. So, John, I applaud your efforts and I think you have an incredible program going. So I just wanted to say that. But, yes, I'm happy. Jump right in.
Thank you, Lori. I appreciate the plug.
You're very welcome. So, there are, you know, when, so John and I were talking about this, and I am a business growth specialist. I work with companies small all the way up to about 500 employees, and I work with business owners to help them understand how growth creates challenges when you're trying to run a business. Starting a business is actually almost the easiest thing you're ever going to do. It's once you get the business started that the challenges really start multiplying. But what we wanted to focus on today is I wanted to share with you what I think are the five critical concepts that you have to know in order to start a business. A lot of these are going to serve you well beyond the actual startup of your business. And I'm going to leave you a couple of websites to check out, too, because when we're starting a business, there's some real basic concepts and federal tax stuff that you just have to be aware of. It's not confusing. I don't want it to be intimidating to you. I just want you to know a couple of websites that might help you to go visit and check that out. So let me give you a quick summary of the five, and then we're going to go back and talk about them individually. So
Great. The
first one is what I call do something you are passionate about. Number two, do the research to really understand the market and your audience. Three, look at the existing competition and at least know who they are. Four, set realistic expectations from a financial perspective. And five, look for strategic alliance partners that might help you get started. So, John, those are the five we're going to kick off with.
Okay. Yeah, I'm betting number four, the financial one, is probably critical to everybody.
It is. And that one never goes away. That one we just have to stay focused on, and I'll give you some tips on how to do that, because I'm a real stickler on setting up a profit plan and making sure those things come together for you. So, all right, And John, I know there are some questions too that we want to get to. So if any of those questions seem to fit within the area that we're talking about, let's go ahead and just deal with them.
Okay. I wanted to thank you for reminding me. I wanted to let you know we have gotten some questions in already, and I wanted to remind our listeners that there is a box if they're listening, if they're on the website, there is a box where you can submit questions. So if they've taken the link and gone to the live webcast, they can actually submit their questions live, and I'll get them on my screen, and I'll relay them to you. Just as I'm looking at a couple of the questions now, Lori, I think you're going to cover them, so I'm going to hold them, and I'll bring them up again later and make sure we've covered them completely.
Good, good, excellent, because I love the questions, because those are real questions. Those are real people asking real things, so I want to make sure we hammer those if they come in. So
okay.
Let's start about number one was do something you are passionate about. Now, you know, whenever I'm talking with business owners, this thing about passion, I cannot tell you how incredibly important that is. Most of your listeners are, John, are already running, they're in their own field of endeavor. They're police officers, or they might be dabbling in a second business, or they may be thinking about a business.
Yep.
So if they are already a police officer and they're looking to supplement their current income, or they're looking to just try to do something a little different, they should definitely go back and start asking themselves, what am I passionate about? And I'm not talking about, this doesn't have to be scientific. I'm talking about sit down at your computer or take a notebook and pad, go find a quiet place, and just start making a list of the things that you absolutely love, things that trip your trigger, things that it could be something you do right now, like boating, or maybe you're a golfer, or maybe you love to read or travel, or you have a penchant for research. There is a thousand things that people get excited about, and those are the things we should be thinking about when we're starting to think about running a business. Because if you're passionate about something, you're gonna find all kinds of things that get you excited about it. Go ahead, John.
Well, I was just gonna comment on that. You know, when I retired from law enforcement, and it's been 7 years already, I thought that I wanted to get away from law enforcement and I wanted to start a business and do something completely different. And I spent a lot of energy and time and money trying to go in a different direction, and ultimately, you know, I came full circle. I came back to something that I'm very passionate about, something I think is important, and that's the underlying business for Cops Alive, which is actually called the Law Enforcement Survival Institute. And I can so identify with what you're saying, because I went off in a whole other direction. I wasted a lot of time and a lot of money, and it wasn't where my heart was, and I kind of found out the hard way.
Exactly. No, that's such a perfect example, John. Perfect example. We do not have to go too far away from what we're actually doing today in order to find that. You have, if there are police officers out there who have the same passion you do, maybe, you know, John, yours is kind of all encompassing, but somebody out there may just believe that police officers need a great place to find opportunities for great trips or scuba diving trips or something.
Absolutely.
Scuba dive, you know, yep. And so they could start an entire business around cops diving.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. They could write about it on the web. They can invent something and sell it. They can write something and sell it.
They could create a group of cops that go scuba diving. I mean,
yep.
So I don't, this whole passion thing is, and the other way to go about doing this is to sit down, talk to a good friend, get a group of people around you and start talking about what your thoughts are, and let other people, because other people also see you differently than you see yourself. And so the input you might get from your close group of friends or even relatives might be, well, gee, you know, Joe, you seem to me like you love road racing, bicycle road racing. You do that every weekend. You're passionate about bikes. So what about something around that? I mean, so we might shut that down. We may not even think about road racing from a bicycle. What could I do with that? So sometimes you need outside perspective could tell you what you really seem to be passionate about.
Yep. Now, I ignored all those voices for years, and then finally they were what led me back to start copsalive.com. So, you know, sometimes you have to put your ego aside and actually let people help you.
Yes. Oh, God, that is so true.
Yeah.
All right, so that's so a couple of tips behind the passion thing is look internally, look inside yourself, and ask some serious questions. What do I love? What am I passionate about doing? What am I passionate about thinking about? And the second tip, so that's an inward look. That's asking mm-hmm. yourself and sitting down and spending some time really writing some stuff down or getting out some poster board. And you know, I personally have never done this, so I'm not speaking from experience, but I think you have, John, or I know people that have done visioning boards, right?
Yeah, I've done something similar to that, and sometimes it helps to get stuff out on paper where you can see it and get it out of your head where you don't, you know, really act on it.
So that's another idea, is cut out pictures from magazines and stick them on stuff. Just yep. so it, because as you're flipping through a magazine, you might see something that just catches your attention. So, and the other thing to do, so it's inward looking. Get that group of friends around you. Start asking them. Tell them what you're thinking and let them give you some input. And then, like you said, John, think about listening. You know, you don't have to jump on what everybody says. That's not the important thing here. But just allow that information to come into your head without making any prejudgments about it.
Yep.
And then the third thing you can do, which is really pretty amazing because we have this tool at our fingertips now, is go Google. Just Google stuff.
Yep.
And we'll get into that a little bit later on in one of the other critical concepts, because that's another great way to find out who your competition is. But before you know who your competition is, you got to know what you want to go do. So there's some steps here you have to kind of figure out. But you can also Google for ideas. You know, go bike road racing and see what else is out there, what other people are doing. Anyway.
Let me add one to that, Lori, that came to my mind while you were talking, and that is, you know, sometimes I think there are cops out there that have a hard time getting their head around this concept of being passionate. But I think sometimes you can just ask yourself, what am I spending most of my time doing, or what am I spending most of my time away from work doing? And your examples are great, whether it's scuba diving or bike racing or whatever it is, gardening. You know, sometimes we overlook those things because they're so much a part of our lives, we don't even think about business opportunities in those areas, and that might be where you find something.
Exactly, exactly. So I'm thinking we've got a couple of points there that we've covered. So yep. Let me move into number two.
Okay.
Number two was do the research to understand the market and your audience. So again, these are all building on each other, because let's say you found something that you decided you're going to give it a shot. You're going to pick this thing that you do a lot or you enjoy doing, and you're going to now go do some research. So again, this is where the websites, the internet can come in so handy. You got to, let's just pick gardening, because that was a great one, John. Let's just pick gardening and say, all right, you're passionate about gardening. What am I going to do with gardening? What should I do with gardening? What does that look like? I certainly, you know, that might seem very limited. Well, I can't go out and help people garden. I can't start a nursery, or that's got way too much intensive capital behind it. So what should I do about gardening? So go in and just put in gardening under the Google search bar and see what comes up. Find out what people are doing in gardening. I'll guarantee you there are ebooks on how to raise every single kind of vegetable you could probably ask for. There's articles on and ebooks on, you know, organic gardening, which is the big craze now. So I'm sure if you just go in and do some serious research, you're looking for a couple of things. You're because, again, here's where these things overlap a little bit. But if you decide you want to do gardening and you find some ideas behind gardening, then keep going deeper. Gardening for seniors. Gardening for police officers. I mean, seriously, go Google it. Maybe it's out there already. Gardening for children. Gardening for women, gardening for men. All I'm saying is go deeper into your topic and think of every kind of possible link that topic could come up from, and that will help you get an idea of how many other people are out there doing it. Do not, let me repeat this, do not let the number of things out there discourage you.
Yeah, that's good
because
advice.
Because that isn't what this is about. There's always room for another great idea. At least that's my opinion. Do you share that opinion, John?
Yeah, you know, when I look back in history, I think every great idea has been redone about 1,000 times. And that doesn't mean that they're not great ideas anymore. I mean, when you look in the library full of books, every book has probably been written, but it probably hasn't been written for every reader. And sometimes you just have to go off on your own path, and if it's a great idea, lots of people will follow you.
Exactly. I know a gentleman who does e-books on fly fishing. He's got a whole website on fly fishing. And he writes e-books. He gets other people to write e-books, and then he puts them on his website, and he sells it. He's got a hot little business. I'm going to guess he's making around $5,000 a month now.
Wow.
Just selling products and e-books and affiliate products from other fly fishing sites. So, you know, and he goes down to fly fishing with nymphs. I'm not a fisherman, so you have to excuse my lack of knowledge here, but I think there's nymphs fly fishing.
I think that's a kind of a fly.
Okay, so, I mean, that's how specific he gets. And
yep.
So the whole concept behind this research is to really start understanding the market, what's already out there, and then singularly different from that is your audience. And again, who do you want your product or service to sell to? Do you want it to be children between the ages of 12 and 14, or do you want it to be men in between 45 and 65, or do you want it to be for people that live in the southern part of the country? You can define your audience any single way you want to, but the point here and the way to make a successful business, and this one hinges on a lot of things that you're going to keep doing throughout the life of your business. So if you nail this one now, you're going to be ahead of the game down the road, and that's your audience. Just do not, like I was talking to a group of CEOs last week, and the gentleman that runs the group was saying, we don't go by demographics anymore, Lori, because our demographics don't define our audience. Our audience is defined psychographically, meaning it's what they do, what are their leisure activities, how do they spend their time when they're not being a CEO? I mean, they've because this is a company that grabs CEOs and has them meet with them on a regular basis every month. Demographics were not helping them. They had to find a specific CEO who was a willing sharer. They would be willing to share about their business in a group of other CEOs. Hmm. And you're not going to get that by looking at just demographics. So that audience thing is really, really incredibly important, and that's another place you can go talk to people. Don't let this one be just your little world. Go out and talk to as many people as you can and say, if I was going to do a business around gardening for seniors, I'm just picking something, how would that resonate with you? What do you think that sounds like? And somebody might come back and say, wow, are you talking, what's a senior? 55? What, 60? And why is gardening so special for them? So at that point, really start just getting out there and talking to people. That's incredibly helpful research. And you can even, if you have a website, I'm not sure you do, but if you would have a website, obviously you can start blogging right away on any of these ideas.
Yep. You know, one thought that comes to my mind there also is sometimes I think the hardest part of starting a business is deciding what it is you're going to sell. And that is the bottom line of business, is what are you selling? And, you know, if you're not quite clear on that, this research phase is a really good place to be asking people, if you can identify your audience, ask them what they want. And that might help you identify a product, and it might be very obvious to you once you get their feedback. So I think that's great advice.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Just ask. Again, last week I was talking with CEOs in a recession economy where CEOs, a lot of businesses are hurting. There's no question about it. A lot of places are hurting. One of the very basic premises that we talked about is go ask your customer what they want you to do right now. You know, because sometimes we do make a lot of assumptions about that. We assume the customer doesn't have money to spend, therefore we don't go pitch them. or we don't go selling something to them. We make an assumption that they're not ready for something. So, yeah, ask. Put yourself in what I call inquiry mode and just become a little curiosity machine and just go out there and start asking questions.
Are you telling this audience full of cops that we should play detective?
That's good.
Yeah, it's the same thing. It's the job that we do every day, and yet sometimes when we get off in a different realm, like business, we forget everything we know and we think that it doesn't apply. And I'm here to tell you it does apply.
It does apply. That's great. No, John, you're absolutely right. You guys, police officers have incredible skills, incredible skills. They're great at listening. They're great at uncovering information. So they ought to be absolutely exceptional at this. And you know what I was going to bring up real quick right here, John, because I know you'd mentioned the fact that some police officers are either running a franchise or are considering running a franchise.
Yep. And yeah, actually, we got some questions about that.
Okay. And the franchise world is no different. There's the same, if you're looking to start a franchise, these same concepts apply. Make sure you're doing something that you enjoy. Do not think that you're going to go make money off of a restaurant just because somebody told you, oh my God, there's tons of money to be made in restaurants. Make sure that you love the concept of food.
Yeah.
Make sure you love the public servant attitude, because that's a huge requirement when you get into the hospitality industry. But so the same concepts that I'm talking about apply to a franchise just the same.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I had a franchise business long ago when I was a rookie police officer, and it is a lot of work. So maybe we can talk about that again at the end, because I think it's a whole different realm than starting your own business.
Yep, absolutely. And there's a lot of options out there for you to look at.
Yep.
There's some great resources. Okay, jumping into number three. Number three says, look at the existing competition and know who they are.
Okay.
So again, this is one that's kind of overlapping some of these arenas, but whereas before you were going to do research to really figure out what it is you want to do, and once you found an idea, how many others are out there doing it, that was kind of a different mindset. Now you're going to go in and you're going to say, okay, I've got my topic nailed. I know what my business is going to be. I know who my audience is. Now let's go find out who else is my competition. And in this world, again, there's a thousand ways of doing this, and the very best place to start, again, is the Internet. Just go Google the specific keywords that you've come up with, and we haven't even talked about keywords, but in this world of running a business, and ultimately you'll have a website, because I would highly recommend anybody that's running a business today to have a web presence. You don't have to spend $30,000 on a website, but you got to have something. So,
Yep. And
as soon as you get a website up, John and I both know this, you've got to start thinking keyword search. You've got to start thinking search engine optimization. So you might as well start as soon as you can on thinking, what are people searching for when they're trying to find what I just decided I'm going to set up as a business?
And by the way, when you're looking at your competitors, you can probably go to their websites and figure out what keywords they're using, and that might actually help you assemble a list of your own. But basically, they're just descriptors that describe your business and your products.
Exactly. Exactly. And again, there may be people in your audience, John, who are, I'm going to make an assumption here, they're already working. They're police officers. They're working 8 to 5 or 9 to 4 or, I don't know, 7 to 11. I don't know what their work hours are, but they're long and they're intense.
Yep.
So the ability for them to go do all this stuff may seem a little overwhelming, and I understand that. So my tip to somebody who wants to start a business but doesn't want to quit your full-time job because you can't afford to do that yet,
mm-hmm.
is to take these things in small, small pieces and set yourself up a realistic timeline to address them. Do not try to do this all at once. If you're a planner type person, create maybe a calendar and decide that you're going to take the concept number one, where we talked about do something you are passionate about, and you're going to spend you know, maybe 5 hours in the month of July, finding time to talk about, to discover what you're passionate about. Then you're going to find a couple more hours during that month to do a little research. So what I want you to do is think about starting this business, even though once somebody gets an idea in their head to start a business, they want it to happen right now.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
You know, it's like, okay, let's get going. It's like, no, don't go there, especially when you're trying to run a full-time job. You'll get burned out on both ends, and that's just not going to help anybody. So I just want to, as we go through these things, and you've got people in your audience who are going, like, I run a full-time business here. How am I supposed to get this going? Well, let's take it into little pieces for those folks.
Yeah, and that kind of, reverts back to number one, find something you're passionate about. If you're having fun doing it in the first place, it's not going to be so hard to do the work that it takes to get a business up and running. And I don't think there are any cops out there that are lazy. Most of them are probably already working extra duty and off-duty jobs to make extra money, and it may just be a matter of priorities to reorganize some of their time to start building something that's going to continue to pay them dividends for the rest of their lives, not just for a couple of hours on a Friday night.
Exactly. Because, again, the reason, I mean, again, for me, I've been in my own business now 20-some years, so... But before that, I worked for somebody. I think we all have been there.
Yeah.
We've all been where we've worked for somebody. We've been an employee. And you are, it's a great place to be, but it's also a little scary, especially in a recession economy where you can't count on somebody keeping you. So getting into your own business has a huge amount of upside, meaning you are in control of your own destiny. You have control over the amount of money you bring in. But do not take this lightly. There's nothing harder that I believe is than in running your own business. It's wonderful. It's rewarding as all get out. But you cannot go into something like that lightly. And we'll jump into that when we get into the financial side. But
before we go on, Lori, I just got a question. Maybe you can go a little more in depth. They asked, what is it I need to know about my competition?
So what you want to know about your competition is, one, are they, is their audience your audience?
Okay.
All right, so I don't know, again, the best way to try to figure that out is go to their website, spend a lot of time looking at the services or products they offer to get a sense of who they're directing it to. For instance, some businesses, it's very obvious they're all for women.
Yep.
There are women-only businesses out there. They only want women people coming in. So others are age-specific or activity-specific. So just for sure, definitely, you want to know who that your competition's audience is, because that's who you're going to go head-to-head with mostly. The other thing you want to just try to get a sense of is, this reach thing is pretty hard to put an identifier on. Like when you ran a brick-and-mortar business, it was, who's your competition locally?
Right.
Who's your competition regionally? Who's your competition nationally or internationally? Today on the Internet, in the Internet world, I'm not sure those play. However, you can get a sense when you're looking at somebody's website as to how much effort, time, quality they've put into their products and their services and their website. And again, that doesn't tell you a whole lot other than there's room for improvement. And if you can best them a little bit, you might have an edge.
Yep.
So that's kind of what to watch for. I can't even tell you how many consultants are out there, and I'm a business consultant. I just call myself a business growth specialist to try to differentiate myself a little bit. But I have tons of competition, and I have to just keep aware of who my audience is so that I'm not trying – so I really stay on target with my audience versus getting caught up in everybody else's audiences.
Another thought that came to my mind there was, if you were thinking about starting a coffee shop as an example and you went and looked at a Starbucks – if you just assume that their business is all about coffee, I think you'd be mistaken, because I think a lot of other places have realized that Starbucks is about being a gathering place, and it has it has the side effect of having coffee there, but they've really created a place for people to go and hang out. And, you know, if somebody were just trying to start a business to compete with that, if they didn't have that in mind, I think they'd be missing the boat.
Yeah, and that's a great point, John. That goes into that whole marketing thing of what do you really sell?
Yeah.
You know, Starbucks, you're absolutely right. If they think they're selling coffee, they're wrong. And they're wrong. They need to be clear on that because there's too many people out there selling. McDonald's now sells coffee, and McDonald's is going head-to-head with Starbucks.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to really look at yourself and say, what am I really delivering to my audience?
Yep.
Because, John, you're not necessarily delivering a website that cops can come visit. You're creating a lifestyle concept for cops. You're creating an opportunity for cops to look beyond what they're doing today.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about starting this, there are plenty of websites out there for cops, and I don't know that we actually think about competition in the same vein, but, you know, Police One and Officer.com, there are a bunch of them out there, but they're not doing what Cops Alive is doing. And Cops Alive is doing what it's doing because I had a friend that was only 38 years old and had already left the police service, and he committed suicide. And I thought, you know, we deserve better than this. And I found out that the suicide stats were incredibly high for cops. And lots of other bad stats are there, too. And so Cops Alive talks about some things that a lot of these other websites don't talk about. And, you know, so when I looked at my competition, they were providing a lot of great stuff. I don't think of them as direct competitors. I think we're all trying to help the same audience, but we're all helping them differently. And, you know, you don't have to think about it as a purely competitive thing. It's just a matter of what is it you're providing and how are you different than everybody else.
Exactly. That's a perfect example, John. And again, how do you go find the people you want to come to you? That's the challenge. You've got to make sure that's why that clarity of audience is so important.
Yep.
Okay, number four.
The financials.
This is set realistic expectations financially. You know, I know for myself that there's a couple of dynamics with this. One dynamic is, okay, you want to sit down, you want to start a business, and the first thing that everybody tells you to do is get your business plan together.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say that some of that is a little overblown. I don't mean to say that in a way that would give anybody the sense that they shouldn't do some thinking about it, but what I think happens is we get these business plans going and we start kind of thinking ahead and going, okay, well, if I get this business going and if I have, you know, 300 people that come to my website every month and buy $10 worth of goods, I'll be bringing in $3,000 a month in revenue, bang, just like that. And then you go, well, gosh, if I can do that now, how about if I get 600 people? And then what if I got 1,000 people? And pretty soon your business is bringing in all this money and you haven't really done anything. So my caution on a business plan is do something that's extremely realistic for your brain. Make sure that the most important thing for you to do financially when you start a business is make sure you have some kind of cash flow, cash backup plan so that you know that you can live on what you've got right now for a while, because your business will not start generating income right away. I don't care how good you are.
Yeah.
And I don't care what your product or service is. It just will not start generating enough money for you to take home and put in the bank. So just be realistic is all I'm saying. I think a one-page view of here's what my product or service is. Here's who my audience is. Here's how I'm going to find that audience. I'm going to have a web presence. I'm going to do email marketing. And we're not even going to get into the marketing side because we don't have time to do that today. But, of course, marketing is everything when it comes to starting up a business.
Yep.
So your business plan needs to be succinct and real. That's all. Just make it real. Do not feel you have to project. Now, there's a different side of all this, and I'm just addressing an organically growing company. I'm not addressing a company where you are trying to go out and generate investment dollars to come in.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to go out and get the bank or a venture capitalist or somebody to give you $300,000, $500,000, or even $150,000 to start your business up, that's a whole different world. So I am not addressing that, because then you'd better have your business plan tightened up and looking extremely professional. But
yeah.
I'm talking about somebody who has, you know, maybe, I don't know, several thousand dollars that they're willing to put aside and say, I'm going to sink it into a website, I'm going to sink it into some marketing, I'm going to sink it into some projections on where I think I can start getting product development done. Whatever that might look like, just make it realistic and talk to people who have already done it. You know, this is not an area that people have not experienced.
Yeah.
So do
well,
not.
Well, and it's not an area a lot of cops haven't experienced, so at very least you can get together a group of friends and have some realistic talks about, you know, what business is all about and what its good sides are and what its bad downsides are.
Yeah, just think about it. You know, if you do some research, find out, start talking to people and say, look, have you ever had a website done? Yes, I had a website developed by so-and-so. How much did it cost you? Well, it ran about $2,000. And then you talk to somebody else. Oh, I got one done for $500. I mean, right now there are so many options out there to start your own website for minimal dollars. And, I mean, some of it is you can just do it yourself. You don't even have to hire somebody.
Yep.
So if you have the penchant for that kind of technology approach, go after it. There's 1,000 ways to do your business. I just don't want people to create a lot of energy behind a business plan that they get really frustrated over after about 3 months because they haven't hit any of the markers, they haven't done anything they said they were going to do, and they're looking around going, this is no fun, and why did I ever go here?
Yep.
You know? So financially, just be smart. Very few businesses start with no money. Let me put it that way. And you can't grow a business without money.
Yeah.
So have enough back of you to keep it going for 3 months, 6 months, and project it. Know that the first thing you should do when you start a business is figure out how much it's going to cost you. So the first thing you could do is at least write down what cost you need to cover. And just be realistic about that. Is it your mortgage payment? Do you have to cover that right away? Or do you need utilities? Do you need the web hosting? Do you need to go hire somebody to come in and do some technical setup for you? Do you need to buy a computer? Maybe you don't even have a computer because you've always had one at the job that you hold.
Yep.
You know, so what are the very basic things that you know you're going to have to go out and buy? And then figure out what that's going to cost you every month and at least be able to cover those costs for 3 to 6 months or more, so that as you're getting your product developed or your service developed and you're starting to get out there and network and start driving the audience that you're looking for into your site or into your business, you don't panic every day because you're not having a revenue stream coming in.
Yeah. I'm going to brag on you a little bit later when I talk about your profit plan and the Follow the Money series, but I want to bring up that issue that you've always referred to it differently than I've heard a lot of other people refer to it, and you call it a profit plan. And when I went through those materials, it really broke it down for me and made it pretty clear that we're talking about a budget here, and that budget includes things that I have to spend money for every month just to keep the business running, whether it's earning any money or not. And you know, I really learned the hard way that you have to plan those pretty far out, especially with the economy the way it is now, so that, you know, the money is there as you build a customer base, as you build your products, as you, you know, you build your market for your business.
Yes, absolutely, John. Thank you. Yeah, I find that there's such a abhorrence to the word budgeting, so I try to avoid using it. But it really is a budget. It's a but I use the word profit plan because ultimately you are trying to plan to be profitable, and the only way you can do that is to be really, really clear on what it's going to cost you to run your business every month.
Yeah, and my personal opinion is you should really exaggerate that because you just don't know when the money is going to kick in.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd rather you err on the side of thinking your costs are going to be higher than they are.
Yep.
And certainly your revenues are going to be lower than they are. That's just a good, solid way to try to stay ahead of what I call your growth curve.
Thanks.
Okay, so that's number four. Set realistic expectations financially. And there's, a ton of concepts we can talk about there, but let's jump into five because
okay.
I want to make sure we're leaving time for the questions, too. Look for strategic alliance partners to help you get traction. Now, what is a strategic alliance partner?
I was just going to ask you that.
You know, my experience has been when I first got into, when I left the field of parks and recreation, which is what I did for 14 years before I started a business with a partner, Sherry, and we were business partners. So
mm-hmm.
we worked well together for 14 years as business partners, and I had an ownership stake in that company.
Mm-hmm.
So a business partner is not a strategic alliance partner because the difference is just that clean. It's you both have financial stake in the company.
Okay.
So I'm not talking about business partners here. And the second business I ran was with another partner, James Fisher, and he and I were business partners. Today, for my own reasons, and they're only my reasons, I am not a proponent of no business partners or business partners, but for me, my third business is my own business, and I choose that route specifically because I like being on my own. I like the ability to make my own decisions and to jump when I need to jump and to lay back when I want to lay back and do things the way I want to do them. So a strategic alliance partner, and of which I have one very serious one right now, and I'm getting ready to set up a second one.
Mm-hmm.
So here's the difference. Here's what a strategic alliance partner is in my world. Let's say that you go down the path of that gardening concept we just talked about, and you open a business and you're doing gardening for seniors. I'm just keep going back to that because that one just came into my little head.
Okay.
All right, so let's say that there is a residence home for senior citizens that would love to provide their seniors with more information on gardening because they have an area that their seniors can go garden.
Okay.
So let's just say, for instance, that you think that there would be a great public relations drill for you if you were seen as helping a senior residence home learn how to garden or get a special... you give them seeds every year. I don't know what it is, but basically a strategic alliance partner is where you say, we're gonna work together. You still run your business the way you run your business, and you make your money, and I'll make my money. There's no commitment between us to share in what we're actually doing financially. But what we end up doing is being synergistic. So when your business starts doing well, my business starts doing well, and when my business starts doing well, your business starts doing well, because we have this synergistic relationship that we work closely with, and we have the same audience. We don't have the same product. We don't need to have the same product. We don't even have to have it come close, but our audience is the same, and we're going to work together to find ways where we can partner to help our audiences learn more about each other in a way that helps both our businesses. Does that make sense to you, John?
Yeah. It's kind of compatible businesses doing the same thing to kind of help the same audience.
Yeah. So the reason I like strategic alliance partners, why I put it in here as one of my five critical concepts, is we think we have to do all this by ourselves. And we think a little, we might even get a little... selfish, or we might get a little scared that mm-hmm. if we reach out too far or we open up too much, somebody will come steal our idea, or they'll take it away from us and they'll do it better than we will, or I don't want to share that idea with somebody, they might do it, or something. We get, instead of coming from a place of abundance, we come from a place of fear.
Yeah.
And in my world, I've never found a strategic alliance that I thought about carefully. They do take time and they do take energy, and you do have to do it intentionally. They take a lot of effort. But the value is pretty high. And what you've done is you've opened your world up to a whole another world that's already existing. And you don't have to go out and reinvent that one. You just get to pull it in to yours. And then they get to pull it back from you. So that's why I think strategic alliances are incredibly valuable, especially when you're trying to get something started. It might reduce your costs. It might reduce the amount of exposure that you personally have to go out and get on your own. So you could think really about two or three very cleverly designed strategic alliance partners from the get-go that could be great for you. John, you probably have thought about this from your business.
No, but you know, every other website I've seen, they offer hats and T-shirts and all kinds of things that, you know, kind of support your brand, I guess.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that's something I want to delve into. And it strikes me that you're talking about kind of two compatible businesses that reach the same audience, that, you know, you're adding value to the audience by putting your products together. So I could invite somebody that's already distributing hats and T-shirts for cops to vend their stuff through Cops Alive, and they could, you know, then encourage their customers to check out the website and listen to our teleseminars and stuff, you know, if the audience is cops, that gives them information as well as their hats and T-shirts. So I guess in that respect, I've thought about doing that. I haven't really crossed that bridge yet, but it's an interesting idea. I appreciate the insight on that.
It's a good way to think about it, and I don't think too many startups go there. And you know, the real example I'll give you in terms of my world is there's a I work with other business consultants to train them on the model that I use. It's a business model, and so I train other business consultants and executive coaches on what I do. Well, I found a strategic alliance partner who had already come up with a very, very effective 360-degree leadership assessment. Mm-hmm. When he learned about my material, he put the seven stages of growth concepts to his product,
mm-hmm.
and now I offer his product along with my with that program. And now instead of one revenue-producing program for my growth curve specialist, they have two, and I didn't have to develop the second one.
Wow.
But it helps me get, it's a good marketing tool, because now I can go to a potential growth curve specialist and say, not only am I going to train you on one revenue producing tool, but I'm going to train you on two, which will recover your investment in my program in less than 6 months if you apply both of them. So it just became extremely synergistic. I did not have to spend one dime in getting Doug, my strategic alliance partner, on board with me. We split revenues. We have a revenue sharing program that we've set up, but that doesn't have to happen. It just worked well in our situation.
Huh.
So I think you just have to get a little creative, but I would like people to start thinking about strategic alliances as a way of getting some quicker traction and getting your company off the ground a little faster than what might normally happen if you just try to do it all by yourself.
I think that's good advice, because, you know, in this economy, it sure makes sense to not have to reinvent every single wheel. And at the same time, it sounds like in your case, you've got an additional tool that you can offer that you didn't have to invent, you didn't have to create, and you can sell it and they can sell your product, and it's kind of win-win. So it sure does seem to me that it's ideal for a new startup. And you know, I've obviously focused on doing business on the web, and I encourage other officers to do some sort of web-based business, and it sure seems to me that that's a really good way to do business, because on the web, you know, there's no boundary. You can be working with somebody in another country, in another time zone, and all of those things don't matter because it's all real-time on the web.
Exactly, and the last point behind that is, when you enter into a business relationship, a business partnership, it comes with a lot of challenges. So if you're ready for that, great. If that's what you want to do when you just get your business started and you've got a good friend or somebody that you want to partner with, I'm not at all discouraging that. I just know that those partnerships create bigger challenges as the business grows. And if you get a good lawyer on board and you've outlined a good exit strategy if the business ever does go away and you're both partners, you got to figure out how to disband it. Nobody gets hurt. Everybody walks away okay. Just know that that business partnership requires just a little more legal thinking than what I'm suggesting here. And maybe someday the strategic alliance could turn into a business partnership, but you've had a chance to kind of try it before you buy it.
That's a good example. I'm afraid I can throw my example out there again. I've been one of those cops that did both, you know, the off-duty work while he was employed as a police officer and also had my own business on the side. And I've had a number of different kinds of businesses. And in a couple of them, I went into business with a couple of friends that were people I worked with. And in one example, and those have all dissolved now, but in one example, our friendship was ruined just because of the stress of that business and its financial burdens. And one of the others, we managed to get out of it maintaining our friendships, but I kind of learned that lesson a hard way of be very careful about starting businesses with family members or friends because it really does put a strain on your relationship.
It really does. And right now, like you said, John, with the Internet, there's really no reason you can't start something by yourself. There's no reason unless there's a financial issue. So that's all I could think of is you've got a good friend or somebody who's willing to bring some money into the picture, and that allows you to get started, certainly explore that. That's not at all. I'm just saying be careful. Do the things you need to do on your side to protect yourself and just be smart.
Yeah.
So, John, let me do this real quick. Let me go back and just highlight the top five again, and then I want to let you drive us down the next path if you want to go deeper into the franchise thing or attack some of those questions. We could do that. So
okay.
Let me just summarize real quick. The first concept was do something you are passionate about.
Yep.
The second one, do the research to understand the market and the audience.
Yep.
Number three, look at the existing competition and know who they are. Number four was set realistic expectations financially. And number five is look for strategic alliance partners to help you get some traction.
Excellent.
Okay.
I appreciate that, and I wanted to put a plug in here. You know, I think we are only scratching the surface, and that was certainly the intent of doing this teleseminar. It's really meant for people that are thinking about it but haven't made the leap yet. And I'm hoping for those people out there that have started a business, maybe this will remind them of some of the things that they really meant to do but didn't quite get around to it, and maybe they better go back and take care of those things before they get too far into business. But I wanted to refer people to your website. You can find out more about Lori from her website at IgniteYourBiz, with a Z, .com, IgniteYourBiz.com. And I wanted to promote one of Lori's products, which is a audio CD series called Follow the Money, and it's a 4-CD set, one of which is, I've got them right here in front of me, Ignite Your Profits, Creating Your Own Profit Plan. That's the one that I found exceptionally valuable, but they also include Ignite Your Success by Tracking Your Progress, Ignite Your Cash Flow Without Burning Through Your Money, boy, isn't that important, and Ignite Your Focus because setting goals is not enough. And I want to assure everybody listening that, you know, Lori is just scraping the surface here. There is so much to know, and she really has a lot of great information. That's why I invited her here today, and I really appreciate your time, Lori, and I want people to investigate that a little bit further. If they're really serious about starting a business, I think they really need to do some homework, and maybe some of the homework is doing some of that work first.
I appreciate that, John. Thank you
no problem.
So much. So what questions?
Yeah, let me go through the list. I think I was looking at them while we were talking. I think you've covered a lot of them, but let me just read them all, and you can see if there's something you want to add, that'd be great. First one is, I want to start a business. What is the very first thing I should be doing? I think we were just talking about that, but go ahead. What's your thought on that?
you know, again, I would go figure out what you want to do. Go do the thing, and I think you even said it better than the passion side, John. Do what you enjoy doing. Go find out what that looks like. Do not jump into something because you think it's going to make. Oh, here's the other thing. Don't start a business because you want to make money.
Yeah,
so counterproductive.
Well, but I can hear that loud and clear, actually.
And counterintuitive, but really, mm-hmm. You will fail every time if your only purpose in starting a business is to make money. I'm sorry, but it just doesn't seem to work that way. It can, but it can't. It works that way best when you have, in my experience, when you have somebody with mega bucks behind you throwing all the money at it and forcing all the issues to go away because they can buy their way out of it.
Yeah.
So go in and find something you love to do. Find something you love to do and then turn that into a business. That will serve you well. Yes.
Good advice. Another question is, as a working police officer, my job must come first. What do you think about starting a business on the side? Will I really be able to do what needs to be done for business success? I think we've covered that, but maybe you can add something.
That's a great question, though, and my empathy goes out to anyone who's doing that because it's a lot of work. Again, let's go back and piecemeal it. Take those five concepts and put them into small little buckets and attempt it to organize it on a can-do basis every month and put a realistic goal. I'm going to have my business pretty well ready to run in 6 months or 8 months or 12 months or 18 months. I don't think we need to panic over the fact that, well, if I don't do it now, I'm going to miss the opportunity or somebody else will come up with the idea. Yeah, somebody may come up with the idea. There's already a billion out there already. You're not the first one that's going to come up with it anyway.
Yep.
The goal is do it better than anybody else and you will succeed. So just take it small and take it easy and do not burn yourself out on both ends because you're not, I don't want your burden. You, the police officer, is already working a hard, very stressful job, and now you're trying to put the extra pressure on yourself to get your own business started. It's very doable in this world with the internet, and there are people out there truly running their side business through the internet and still running their, having a full-time job. And they're doing both very well because the internet is so easy to manage that way.
Right. Well, you know, and I'm reminded some of the thoughts that came to my mind while you were saying that. You know, a lot of really famous businesses, I'm pretty sure, started by somebody just doing what they loved, and everybody loved what they were doing, and then it became a business. And I've heard the story about Mrs. Fields Cookies as being an example of that, where she had a great recipe, and everybody wanted them, and she finally decided she should start selling them, and look what happened with that. And another one that comes to my mind is Chipotle, which I think has businesses around the United States, at least.
Yes.
They make burritos, and I think that started as somebody's passion for a different kind of a recipe, and, you know, these are food examples, but started as somebody's passion. I certainly know plenty of guys that used to make great burritos and tamales and all kinds of things and bring them into roll call, and everybody loved them, and, you know, some of those people have maybe turned that into something, and others have chosen not to, but there are plenty of success stories out there. I think Chipotle was bought out by McDonald's, so obviously they reached a peak of success that probably started in somebody's, you know, kitchen.
Well, and there's an energy bar story.
I was thinking there's one here in Colorado called Laura Bar that started in somebody's garage.
Yep, same kind of thing. So those are the success stories, and that's why when you're doing something you love, it's almost hard not to be successful.
Yep. Here's a question I think we may have touched on, but let me get your thoughts. It says, I'm not sure I want to put the effort into writing a business plan. Do you really think that they're worth the effort, putting all that energy into writing a plan?
We did. We touched on it. Just I just don't want you to go overboard. Again, unless you're going for money, you're trying to get investment dollars in, even with family and friends, you're going to have to put together a pretty detailed marketing plan, business plan, if you want to bring in money. But if it's just you and you're trying to grow this organically, that's the place I would go in terms of setting up your budget, your profit plan, and making sure you can sustain it for the next 6 to 8 to 9 months without any money coming in.
Okay. Before I forget, I wanted to have you mention the websites that you mentioned at the beginning of the program.
Oh, yes.
And I think this is a good place because there's a comment I wanted to make about business planning because I busted my butt writing a business plan for Cops Alive. So I'd like to hear the websites you wanted to mention.
Well, there's two, because I know we can get overdone with this. But for people who are looking for something real basic, it's the, believe it or not, it's www.irs.gov/business. So it's www.irs.gov/business. Now,
okay.
The reason I like this one is it talks about, is it a business or is it a hobby?
Mm.
Because it's a huge difference in terms of the IRS view.
Yeah.
And you want to know going in what business structure you should be setting up, what if you need to get an EIN number, it's your employment identification number, how you're going to be paying taxes, what kind of record keeping you need to be keeping, if you're going to do a calendar year or a fiscal year, what accounting methods you're going to use. So you don't have to get hung up on this stuff. It is not intimidating, but if you start it the right way to begin with, you won't have to go backwards and fix it later.
Yeah, good advice.
That's the first
okay,
one.
Talk to the IRS, okay.
Yeah, the old IRS. I'm surprised too, but and then the other one was Inc.com. That's the magazine. Inc.com.
Oh, yeah.
And it's got inc.com/guides, G-U-I-D-E-S,
okay.
/start_biz. So it's inc.com/guides/start_biz.
Great.
And this one has business planning, business plans, how to buy a franchise. That one's got really good information, too.
Okay.
The only other one I'll mention, because we wanted to talk a little bit about franchise, is IFA.com.
Ida Frank Adam?
Yeah.
Okay.
Ida Frank Adam. It's the International Franchise Association.
And is that a .com?
That's a .com. So that's just another good one for franchise people.
Okay. And I was just going to say that I went through a program that's put on by the Small Business Administration. It's done all around the United States. It's called Next Level, N-X-L-E-V-E-L, and it's put on differently. Sometimes it's through the local community college. The one that I went to was put on through the local Chamber of Commerce. And in my case, it was a 3 or 4 month long program where we went once a week for a couple of hours a night, and they actually held our hands and walked us through writing a business plan. And it was really good for me because it gave me a chance to get to know people at the local Chamber of Commerce, and you get a lot of support from other business people, you get a lot of support from business leaders in your community. And I would highly recommend that. You can Google Next Level, N-X-L-E-V-E-L, and find out where there's one near you. And sometimes it's, you can go out and buy software to get you started in your business, but I found it easier for me to sit with some other entrepreneurs in a classroom and actually learn from other people that have done it ahead of us.
That's great, Don. That's great.
Give
me that website one more time.
I don't know the exact website. There could be a nextlevel.com. I can't remember. I wasn't prepared to actually tout that. But it is a course that I've gone through, and I would highly recommend it. And I think some of us just need to learn by sitting in a class. Others can learn by reading a book. You know, we're all different learners, but that's another option, and it's one that I found really valuable. Back to the list of questions. This one says, how can I honestly determine whether or not a business idea is worthwhile before I put a lot of time and energy into it? And I guess that comes back to the planning part, right?
Boy, it does. And that, it's just, if there was an easy answer to that, nobody would ever go under.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
It would never have
a General Motors and Ford maybe should have, anyway, go ahead.
Exactly, So, I'm not skirting the answer. There's just not a good answer for that one, because you won't know what you don't know until you go in and try to figure it out. So Well, unless it's a, you know, you'll know it's a bad idea, I would think, right away if everybody you talk to, remember I asked you to go talk to a lot of people, if everybody, not just your good friends but or your family, but people outside your circle say, start asking you a lot of questions and you don't have real good answers for it, that might give you a question. You might have to start questioning, is this really a good idea? So
yep. And that's back to that thing about, you know, ask people what they think and ask if they would buy it. And and then be have enough self-esteem to listen to what they have to say instead of charging ahead because you think it's a good idea.
Exactly.
Here's another one sort of similar. How do I determine how much money I need to start a business? Is there an easy answer for that? I don't think there is.
Well, again, it's budgeting. Like you mentioned, I think if you go down and do a budget, if you start with just what you know you need to cover in terms of expenses to get by.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, you know, again, what we're not talking about, which we all know, go to any bookstore or just go to Amazon.com and Google starting a business, and I'll guarantee you 100,000 books will pop up.
Yeah.
And those books, there's even a small business kit for dummies. You know, the dummy series books, those yellow and black things.
I love those.
Yeah, there's one on my bookshelf. I'm just looking at it. The Small Business Kit for Dummies. And they can give you templates. They can say you need to be sure you budget for this and this and this and this. So I think that one could get some really good valuable information if you just go Google some books and go find a basic book, and they'll tell you what you should plan for. I'm just reminding you to plan it far enough out that you don't think you're going to get money coming in the first 3 or 4 months.
Okay. And I think, actually, you just answered this next one, too. It says, after today's teleseminar, what should be my next step towards starting my own business? And I think we've answered that one, but maybe go into the bookstore at Amazon.com might be a good way to get it going.
Just get started and, again, start talking to people.
Okay. And the last one, you touched on it. This one was a question about franchises. What's your opinion about franchises? And they ask, am I better off investing my money into a franchise rather than starting my own business from scratch?
Well, that would be a whole nother teleseminar, John.
Yeah, I think it would. And, you know, my reaction to that is I owned a franchise at one point, and the big difference is you have to put up a whole lot more money up front because you're buying something that's already done. So you have to balance that decision to decide whether you really want to pay the money up front or whether you can start your own from scratch on probably a lesser budget.
Yeah, and there's tons of information about franchises. There's franchise brokers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very complicated and serious world. So if you want to get into the franchise world, open your mind and start delving in and get as much information as you can. Talk to as many people who own franchises as possible, because for every pro, there's a con, and for every person that started a franchise that made it successful, there's a story about somebody who got screwed or hated it or whatever. So caveat emptor, just buyer beware. You've got to, it definitely gives you a better base to start from, because yes, the whole program is set out for you, but you know, you got to make sure that franchisor is running a clean, sustainable business, and they're not just trying to get money from you and then they leave you in the lurch and they don't come and support you. So lots of good education stuff out there on franchises. I certainly would say check it out, because there is that advantage of you got yourself at least a starting point. You don't have to go invent the wheel all over again.
Well, and that you just prompted an idea for me. I know at least two cops that are running franchise businesses. One has a, I think it's a Blimpie's sub sandwich shop, and one of them is a Dairy Queen. And obviously there's a lot of franchising and food service, but maybe we'll just invite them to be guests here for a future teleseminar, and we'll find out one cop to another cop what they think about running a franchise business, and we'll get back to you on that one.
That's a perfect idea. That would be a great educational tool for people.
Okay. Lori, I really, really want to thank you very much for being here today and sharing your insights with our audience. And I want to remind everybody you can learn more about Lori and what she has to offer at www.igniteyourbiz.com. And And I think we're going to wrap up today. You know, this is just one of the many things that we think will help police officers live that happy, healthier, and more successful life, both as police officers and as people in society. Whether they're still working or whether they're retired, we want to make sure that cops out there are successful and they actually survive the career. So I'm John Marks. I'm the editor of copsalive.com, and I thank you very much for listening. And, Lori, once again, thank you very much for being our guest today.